Remember, we finished off last week how I was searching for my mother and for my sister, and I did have Baruch Hashem food in Auschwitz for reasons we discussed last week. And before, I knew that we can go into the ladies' camp only once a week, and I saw how my sister was absolutely emaciated, and I didn't want to wait until next week. And actually, as you remember, which we discussed, the next week never came, because in the meantime, the evacuation began from Auschwitz. But in any case, I wanted to somehow see to it if I can send her, give her some bread, some salami, even before that. It just happened that the lager, which I was, if you could call it, residing, dwelling in Auschwitz, there are many, many different lagers, was adjacent to the ladies' lager. But of course, there was an interruption of electrical wires. And if anybody just touched the electrical wires, immediately on the spot, it became electrocuted and it was finished. So I was holding in my hand a big loaf of bread, and I was standing near the electrical wires in case I'll be able to engage, see a lady on the, in the other lager, and I'll be able to offer her a half a loaf of bread, and she'd give the other, which is also very problematical whether she would give it or not, because everybody's only considering their own survival. But at least I tried to do as much as I could and tell her she'd give the other half of the bread to my sister in this bag, which we discussed last week. And suddenly, as I was standing and waiting, maybe a woman from the other side will notice me and come close. Everybody was afraid to come close to the electrical wires, because if our SS saw somebody came close to the electrical wire, to these wires, he was immediately shot. Anyways, I was not roaming around, that in case I'll see somebody who notice me and I'll entice them with a half a loaf of bread, I'll be able to give through the wires, I'll be able to stick through. Of course, you'll have to come very close. And as I was standing near the wires, the chief capo, I'm sure you heard of, I think we also used the term capo before. They were not German soldiers, the SS or the Gestapo, simply the most vicious, most lowest types of criminals. In Germany, they sent to Auschwitz, they should watch over us, they should become our overlords. And so they had in every barrack one capo. Then you have the chief capo. And the chief capo noticed that I'm there for a while, near the wires, and without any warning, he couldn't shoot, only the SS could shoot. He took out his club, a wooden club, and he started to hit me. And just before I told you last week, this SS with the butt of his rifle, how he was hitting me. Here with this wooden club, kept on hitting me over my head, till I fell down. And you think once you were down on the floor already, so then it would stop. Kept on hitting me until he thought I'm finished, and he left me dead. And I don't know how long it took before I was revived by somebody. I myself came back. This I don't remember. This I don't know. But eventually, it could have been hours and hours and hours. I just simply this I can't recall anymore. And I became conscious again, and I went back to my barrack. And within a few days afterwards began this evacuation, which we described and discussed last week. Basically, I don't want to tell any more happenings or stories of Auschwitz, because this I mentioned it last week, and I just wanted to do certain highlights to show how it up in Derech HaTeva, with the loss of nature, I wouldn't be able to be here today. It's only if you see God's hand, how the Abishal helped me, and I said that all those other survivors as well. Why did I mention this particular, although in Auschwitz, in Birkenau, can mention many, many other very interesting, I mean, you can say the most amazing, incredible stories. Because when we were all deliberated by the Americans, and I was in a hospital in Linz, in Austria. And my friend, remember the one who helped me to walk, and I were, you know, we got typhus in the hospital. And suddenly one day, a couple of American army policemen come in and bring in this chief capo. And they asked the prisoners, or the katsipniks, if anybody recognized this capo. If anybody can testify that he was in Auschwitz or in whichever lager, be a testimony, they should be able to meet out, I mean, whatever that in race, whatever they would do to him. And I saw him, I recognized him, I remember the beatings which I got until he left me, that I'm dead, that's why he left, otherwise he kept on hitting me. And only when he thought I'm finished already, then he left me, and still the fear, we saw already the American soldiers, the American occupation army in Germany, and yet this fear, this fright of the Nazis was so overwhelming that this the army police in the United States army uniforms and a whole bunch came and asked, who can testify? I wanted, but just the fear kept me back. What will happen if Germany will still prevail over America? He said, yes, the fright, this panic was such. Poshet, I was afraid. On one second, I just thought I'll jump out from my bed, and I'll say that I can testify that I remember him from Auschwitz in Lager D. He was the chief capo. What he did to me, what he did to all other Jews. But Poshet is fear, and the same thing you can see not so much in now, but for example, Russian Jews who came out 5 years ago, 10 years ago, they were afraid to speak because they knew that the fear, what was going on behind the Iron Curtain in Russia, the informants and so on, even here in America, they were already in a free country, they were still afraid to speak because they were always looking back if anybody listens to them, all these informers. Anyways, let me just mention one more thing. In this death march, we said we were marching from Auschwitz to Germany over a week, close to 2 weeks. From time to time, certain periods, they gave us also not only we should march, but they also let us, because the Germans couldn't do it anymore, they gave us freight trains in which they took us a certain stretch. I remember one particular place, I remember between what cities and what cities, this, I don't even think that they, in those days we knew this, the names of the cities. In any case, like 100 kilometers, 200 kilometers, we were traveling in a train. And the whole time this week, 2 weeks, as I mentioned before, we did not get anything whatsoever to eat. Only thing which we ate was the snow, and this muddy snow. Sometimes when we stopped for a few hours, so we scraped away the snow from underneath us, and sometimes we found a worm. Once I remember, in a certain lake, we found a frog, and worms and frogs, that's what we ate. But this was only when we stopped, and we were near a lake. So we found a frog, or we found the worms, but otherwise, the whole time, we did not eat anything whatsoever. How did we survive? Again, as doctors, under such circumstances, how a person, the weakness, and so on and so forth, and then we did survive. We were traveling, and once, as we were traveling for a few hours, and it was opening freight coaches, not closed one like the cattle coaches, just opening. We stopped, and the whole time it was snowing very heavily, so we caught the snow, and that's what we were just licking our hands with the snow, the only thing which we had to eat. When it stopped, so everybody jumped off from these open freight trains to scrape together a little snow, because how much the snow, as soon as it fell into the coaches, it we were so packed together that it immediately melted. How much we caught in the hands, so that's what we had. But otherwise, just snow, although it was snowing heavily, but we didn't have anything. It was melted. So everybody jumped off. So I also jumped off to get a handful of snow. After a while, when the SS decided we have to go on, so they, but then it wasn't like a whistle, because you signal that everybody has to go. They start to shoot in the air, and this was the signal that everybody has to go back to the coach. You know, these coaches have these huge, these big, big, big wheels. And if you wanted to climb up, so just the floor was very high. Like I was a child, 10 years old, completely, completely emaciated, weak, didn't have any strength. So I had already a handful, I filled up with my pockets, how long it'll melt, but I had snow in my pockets, in this pocket, inside in the shirt, snow. And then they start to shoot, everybody should go back into the coaches. And I tried to jump up, and simply it was for me too high. Just for example, if nowadays you have to, and I just simply couldn't climb up. Everybody was up back in the coaches already, in the freight coaches. And I tried as hard as I tried, see if I couldn't do it. I just simply couldn't pull myself up. And for my right side, left side, shooting, the SS was shooting, I should go up. And I saw simply how much I tried. I was so weak, it was too high to just climb up. I just didn't have any muscles, any strength, I should pull myself up. And I started shooting from all sides. And I thought, here it is. But I tried to survive. I should come home, see my parents. And here I jumped out. I shouldn't have jumped out. My person sometimes regrets, why did you do it? I need just a little snow for simply to put something in my mouth. And here, mamish, I saw the death. Mamish was just shooting from all sides. And I just simply, how much I tried, I couldn't do it. But when the shooting, the bullets start to fly from the side, they wanted I should just grab. But I said, till this moment, I just don't know how did I do it. I mean, maybe from the extraordinary, hidden energies which suddenly became revealed within me, I just don't know. Suddenly I find myself inside. To this day, I promise you, I simply don't know, because I tried for at least for 5 minutes, up and up and up and up. Now, you couldn't ask anybody should help you, because everybody in this death matches, like this guy last week, everybody was only concerned about their own survival. Everybody saw that if you don't jump in immediately, you'll be shot. So by the time I realized that I cannot do it, nobody was on the ground anymore. Everybody was inside. I was the only child. And simply, I just could not. But again, as I told you with the soldier, simply, what? Where did I get the strength this after trying and trying and trying? I was inside. And again, Baruch Hashem, I'm here. Rabbi Yisai, as I said, on this death march, can go on and on and on, tell all kinds of different episodes, different happenings, different stories. But then we can go on this talks can go on not only 4 or 5 lectures, but it'll take 20 lectures, which I don't think this is my plan right now. And eventually it will come out in a book, if you might have the time for it. The next lager after this lengthier march, his evacuation from Auschwitz, was Mauthausen. I'm sure you must have heard of Mauthausen, but one of the most, the worst type of suffering of this extermination. If you exterminate here, if you put in a gas chamber, it's a gas chamber. But while you were alive, this suffering, this torture, this tyranny. What they did there in Auschwitz is much indescribable. This was the second lager. Okay, just get the third one, or the fourth one, because in Sered, Birkenau, Auschwitz, now comes Mauthausen. But in any case, in Mauthausen, the lager was up on a mountain. This is in Austria. Up on a mountain was a lager. And going up to the lager, we had to go through the whole city of Mauthausen. And as we came closer to the mountain where the lager was built, we had to go through narrow streets. Only once did I see all the Germans came out and watching us, tens of thousands. One elderly woman, I saw she's standing by the door of her house, who was crying. And if you see us, literally, we did not have at all the shape, the form, the image of a human being. So I told you, the nails didn't grow for us. We didn't have, the head didn't grow. We only had the skin and bones, but no muscles whatsoever. And only whom did it affect? of the thousands of Germans who watched us, I can't say they were laughing, but just looking. One elderly woman standing by the door of her house, and I saw she had tears in her eyes. And then I thought, the streets were very narrow. The streets were not much wider than this room. So just imagine if you have hundreds of thousands of people just marching. So you crowd together the room, the street. So I thought to myself, why can't I just jump? This lady's crying. Obviously, she has some feeling for us. Maybe I just squeeze myself into her house, through her door, and maybe I'll be able to save myself. I won't have to go through all this torture afterwards. And as I was in my mind debating this, if I can go, I should go in, and I thought, a German is a German. She can have tears in her eyes. And 2 hours later, she can go inform the SS that I escaped, and then it's finished. So at least this, I thought, is almost like suicide. If I still go up to the lager, may Hashem will help me. But here she can inform me. So we came up to Mauthausen, and as I said, is absolutely, the lager there is absolutely indescribable. The suffering. We had to be, as soon as we came into Mauthausen, we had to be, as the Germans call it, deliced. Because the lice were more weight on our clothes, on our body, than we ourselves weighted. You just can imagine what was going on, the lice. And to disinfect us. So the first thing, as we came, arrived in Mauthausen, we take off our clothes, and we went into a place which had a lot of showers. And these thousands and thousands of it. The shower was real hot. It was mamesh machai, you know, it came from a freezing temperature outside. You take a hot shower. It was mamesh, like, really invigorating. But as soon as we finished the shower, we didn't get back our clothes. So we had to run into the barracks from this place where we were bathing, raised up a distance. As for example, if you know your way here on Eastern Parkway, from here, from Hadarat Teire, if you have to run till the at least till to New York Avenue, beyond Kingston, beyond Brooklyn, and I would say even further than New York, somewhere near Nostrand. Sub-freezing temperature. You just can imagine how cold it was. This could have been in March. And up on the mountain, extremely cold. And we were running naked in the nude, just like from this hot shower, we had to run to this place, to the barracks. Then you can think, once we arrive in the barracks, at least there we'll get our clothes already de-liced and disinfected, and we returned our clothes. So basically, this was in the afternoon, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock. We didn't have watches, but from the light, we could discern after the approximate was the time. The next day, around 12 o'clock, we are sitting in his barracks, absolutely sub-freezing temperature. You just can't imagine how cold it was, just on the floor, without any clothes, almost a day. And then you can think, at least the barracks had doors, had windows. It was a closed barrack. The wind didn't, at least this tremendous cold and this wind, this freezing wind didn't come in. In Mauthausen, there were lagers in which there were also wooden barracks, but when we came, the evacuees from Auschwitz, we were not given, because simply didn't have for us place. They just put up tents, these canvases, open if the wind was just shaking the walls of the canvas. And when it was snowing, it was blowing. You just can imagine, and that's how we were sitting there for almost a day. For 4 o'clock in the afternoon, we got back our clothes around 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, midday. Now again, ask a doctor, and Baruch Hashem, I can testify to this, and there are many, many survivors from Mauthausen. As a matter of fact, I was in Australia, so somebody mentioned to me, he was in the same death march, and he also went afterwards to Mauthausen, and he wound up in the last lager where I was in this Gunstuschen, which I'm going to mention later on. And there are many, many. You don't have to take my word. Ask those survivors. If every word which I'm saying, some people say is exaggeration. How is such a thing possible? I also can understand how such a thing is possible. The spirit of Ratzia also can understand how is it possible. And the Neo came out from the lines, then also don't understand how is it such a thing possible. But there are thousands upon thousands of people who came, who also came to there to Mauthausen. And how? We never got a sore throat, and we never got a pneumonia, we didn't get influenza, and Baruch Hashem eventually went, after we were taken to different lagers, how did we survive? So again, if someone will say, all right, it just happened, but too many just, and said too many such things, just point to this cumulative effect, points to something that was a higher power, the hand of Hashem, who made us issue we should survive. Otherwise, ask medically, such a thing is possible. Just like I said, when we marched the death march, I think I mentioned last week. We're exhausted, sweated through and through, sleep overnight, only with a shirt or a light little jacket, because everything was thrown away, and sleep on snow a whole night in sub-freezing temperature, and nobody became sick, nobody froze to death. And here the same thing also, running from this hot bath, it's not a bath, a shower, and running naked for such a distance, in suffering, tremendously cold, and after stay in an open barrack, which the wind just blow in, just like you would sleep on the street, or the street in the street. And how such a thing, Baruch Hashem, nobody came sick? How is such a thing possible? The Rabbi said about this, and how we were, you know, it was snowing, and since we were so packed together, so as the snow blew in into our barracks, so it all melted. So what do you think, where did we sit? We didn't have time place to sleep or just to stretch out. Just everybody squeezed together, just sitting. This heavy snow melted. What do you think, where did we sit or where did we lay in this muddy, dirty, melted snow? And it was cold, icy. And they were sitting the whole time, as long as we were in Mauthausen. And Mauthausen, once we were given a little portion of margarine, that's all. Otherwise, they didn't give us any food. And again, how did we eat? We survived only the snow. And we're sleeping in this melted, icy snow, that's where we were sitting and laying. Of necessity, as I said, at least, since I was requested, like always, to accommodate everybody, and a number of people, many people asked this. I should also mention, until I came back, at least, so I consecrated by, as I said, to mention everything was going on in Mauthausen. Itself would take several lectures, but just to suffice, at least one episode, and you can see go on and on and on. How with the SS and with the Kapos. Let me just jump ahead. From Mauthausen went to a number of other, not anymore death camps. They didn't have gas chambers, but they were concentration camps. But the torture, the suffering, how they treated the Jews was just as bad as in the death camps. Many times they were even worse. Mauthausen had gas chambers, but the other ones did not have. But those Yidden who did survive until they came to these death camps, there was among the biggest Gehenna. Because of dearth of time, and I just don't want to make it much, much longer, this series of lectures, so let me just jump ahead to the very last concentration camp in which we were freed by the Americans, and just tell you one or two little episodes. Afterwards, on the way coming back, you think that on the way coming back, we didn't see Hashem's hand. It's also mentioned on the way coming back. Not after we were liberated. And coming back to Czechoslovakia, because of also many times Chas v'Shalom had to be killed. The last lager, last concentration camp, in which I, on May the 4th, we were liberated, was Gunkirchen. And boys are just like in Teirer. As you say many times, Achron, Achron Chovev, the last one is the most beloved. Or the last one is the strongest. Sometimes again, the last one is the worst. What was going on in Gunskirchen, even Mauthausen was a child's play, or a kindergarten, in comparison to Gunskirchen. Let me just mention a couple of things. Again, there are people whom Gittgenstein, I met somebody when Abar was speaking, so he also mentioned he also was in Mauthausen, in Melk, and after Gittgenstein. For you people, it's unbelievable. I can understand if I wouldn't be there, I also could be able to believe it. It's absolutely unbelievable. Do you realize in Gittgenstein, people, we were not fed at all. People just withered away. Again, not from sickness. Also, we were just in open barracks with canvases. And then it was only the rainy season. The rain went and the mud. And people didn't have anything but to eat. And were just squeezed together. If somebody wanted to go out to relieve himself. So they were in the back. It was in a forest. The lager was in a forest. So they didn't have any bathrooms, privies. So you just went somewhere not in the forest, but to get out, it seemed you couldn't get out, because we were all in these barracks, so squeezed together, simply there was no place, no passageway to go through, just had to climb on the heads of other people. Now, if you wanted to be a gentleman, not to leave yourself on the spot, which most people did. So if you wanted to, you had a little, still remaining a little humanity in yourself, you try to climb to go and get out, but there's no other way how to get out unless you climbed over people's head. On the way, until you got to the door, there's a door, just an opening just in this canvas. Your mum is beaten and punched and bitten and squeezed and scratched because somebody tried to fall asleep. Everybody's so weak, and suddenly you feel a person is on your head. So this one get a punch, and this one. So until you went out, afterwards go back, but only because you still had an ounce or a half an ounce of humanity. You didn't want it, but most people just need there in that place itself. But Rebbeisai, believe me, because I said it's very difficult for you even to just to picture such a thing, not knee high, but I say as tall as my leg, thigh high, leg high. I was laying, not on the floor, on dead people, but how many dead, it filled up the whole ground, that it was as high, one person upon another person, as they died, sitting, they just finished, another person on front of them, it was Rebbeisai at this side, and if you wanted to move in this barrack, you just had to move on dead, not just on the floor, one person, but the dead were spread out, on this height, all over. It was mamish, you can see it's a death camp, or not through gas chambers, not through shooting, just these thousands upon thousands of people just withered away, and just one day, I simply, of course, I was, as I mentioned to you before, with my colleague, this twin who helped me, because I couldn't walk anymore. And I still just couldn't bring myself. As I said, how often do you have to go if you don't need anything? But nevertheless, once a day, once in 2 days, you have to relieve yourself. I just could not ever bring myself. I should just do it on the spot. So all this, through all this beating and all this biting and all this scratching and all this punching, I always beat together because I myself couldn't do it. We just crawled out. It was one day, as I went out, and suddenly I see that, you see, the lager was in a forest. So suddenly I see an SS holds one eagle, and he beats him, holding the rifle with a butt, keeps on beating him. And this eagle is dragging a knapsack. And then this SS opens up the knapsack in front of all these Jews who were standing there. And what does he take out? A body of a human being. And he showed that this person didn't have anything what to eat. This person, Mamesh, which says in the Teuchach, you remember Teuchach, in the chastisement, in Chumash, what will be when the Eden will sinchas v'shalom, you'll eat the flesh of other human beings this person, I saw it before my eyes, this person, I mean, a whole chunks of meat, I mean, this person, and therefore he was building him. And after you think, just like remember Homan, what did Homan say, which we are going to read this this coming Wednesday night and Thursday morning, when he heard that Mordechai is a Jew, it wasn't enough only to revenge or punish Mordechai, he wanted to punish all the Jews. So when he saw this SS, that they had this Jew ate flesh of a human being, so not only he shot him, but he took his automatic rifle and he started to shoot everybody around it. And a bracelet. I was there in the middle. He just started to shoot like this, anybody, all the Jews whom he saw, because one Jew whom he saw, the other ones also did, but one Jew whom he saw was eating in his knapsack, was a torso, the torso of a human person, of a person, and he was eating it. So then, when he started to shoot, so everybody started to run, ready to be run. So I ran into a barrack. Again, a barrack, I mean, it's just there. And since I was like the first one, so that thousands of people, a lager which has tens of thousands of people. So everybody ran, and I was like in the corner. And afterwards, everybody ran also, just each one should be covered by somebody else. When he shoots, you should not, the bullet shouldn't hit you, but rather you'll be covered by somebody else. A whole mountain of people developed, because everybody jumped on another person, you know, just to save himself. He kept on shooting with his automatic rifle gun, like this. And believe me, I was squeezed with the whole mountain. I was like in the middle of the mountain. I couldn't breathe. And I was squeezed and crushed together. I just prayed, David, Rebbeinu Shalom, let me die. I can't take it anymore. No, I couldn't breathe. And this weight. And I was just praying. But fortunately, Hashem didn't accept my prayer. And eventually, he stopped shooting, so people just left this mountain, I mean, went away, and Baruch Hashem, I survived. Let me just tell one more in this discussion. The United States Red Cross, the whole time, nowadays, if anything had happened anywhere in the world, the Humane Society, and the Red Cross, and all these different associations or groups intervene or protest and try to help. The whole time, until it could have been maybe 2 weeks before May the 4th. In other words, it must have been the end of April. Until then, we did not see one representative, not in one of these concentration camps of the Red Cross, or any other humane society should come and try to intervene or do something. Just 2 weeks before we were liberated, the end of the war. So then a group of the American Red Cross came into Ginskirchen and they gave us food. How much did they give? They gave maybe 4 or 5 days, but 2 hours per day, 2 hours per day. And the stress spread out a couple of tables. The bayside, the length of the tables could have been maybe twice the length of this room. And at least you know what Americans give. You have chewing gum, a peanut, you know, the cans with peanut, with peanuts and jelly and the concentrated milk. But anyways, everything was for us, mamish, like the manna in the Midbar. Now, speaking in this lager about tens of thousands of Jews who did not have anything what to eat. You can see, what did we eat? Some people ate. We tried to scrape away from the ground, the earth, and find, luckily we found once in 2-3 days, a worm. You know these little crawling worms? That's what we were eating. And this year, Alex is making the face. This was for us better than a roasted chicken. This is mom, the biggest yontem. Eventually found her. They just hoped that we found a worm. You know, it's really big, really crawly. This. But in any case, luckily, again, call it luck, or it was only they distributed this food for 2 hours per day. And so how many people could go? So we had to line up. As a child, I just don't know how did I make it. The second day I managed, it's 2 hours, maybe 200 people could go, 300 people to go. It went slow, you have to go here, they give you the chewing gum, a box of chewing gum. So you get here, get a little box, a little container of peanuts. Here you get a little, you know, this jelly. Here you go, a little milk. And I guess you went from place to place, and very slowly. So I also luckily, so soon you see whether it's luck or not, I managed to get there. And I was so happy that I got for myself. But believe me, I was even happy I'd be able to share it with my colleague who helped my life. I'd be able to help, give him also something to eat. Now, where could I put? I didn't have any pockets. Where could I put? So I put my jacket into my pants. So consequently, the jacket was inside the pants. So I thought I'd be able to put it here. And this will keep it up. You know, if I put the jacket in my pants, so Mele, here on this side, this will serve like a container I'll be able to put in there. So here I put in one box, another box, another box. Also. And Mamesh, like, I was so happy now I can go reciprocate also what he did for me. I'll be able to help him also. And as I was walking a few steps away from this line, because I got only everything which they distributed, Red Cross distributed, suddenly, a tall fellow comes over to me and puts his hand on my shoulders. He's like a little child. And he says to me, you see all these people? See how they look at you? They want to take it away from you. And come with me, I'll protect you. It did not occur to me, a person can do such a thing to a child. It just did not occur to me. So I was glad. He holds my hand, I put his hand on my shoulders, and we walk. And he's going to protect me that other people shouldn't. He walked away maybe 20, 25 meters from the setup where the SS were standing and the Red Cross from the American Red Cross were distributing. And when he saw that not too many people look at me, he throws me to the ground, to the floor. He jumps on me and he starts to take away from me the food. And in no time, a whole mountain of people were on me already because everybody wanted to grab the food. But you just can't imagine, everybody was just the last ounces of energy, of life. They saw, if they won't have this, they'll die. So merely, they just want to take away from me everything. And again, the same thing what happened before, a mountain of people on me, and I just threw me into a mud, when I tried to breathe, so just the mud went into my nose, into my mouth, as I inhaled this. Leave me again, I was just picked up the body shalom, let them take away everything. And what was the difficulties? They did not know that I have it inside. They thought they were looking for my pockets where I put all this food. And they could not, so they were tearing it until eventually everything was taken away from me. Only one little plastic marmalade, you know, there's the jelly. That's what I remained with, because it was so attached to the body that I didn't even notice it. And again, believe me, I was just speaking to the Kirish Barco, because how a mountain of people and crashing against me, pushing me down, and only my nose and my mouth was inside this puddle of this muddy water. And when I was breathing, there's this mud came into my mouth. Again, how did I survive? I don't know. May the 4th at night, I just could not move anymore. We were here, we heard shooting from guns, artillery, for days before. So we somehow perceived that the allies, we don't know whether it's the Russians or the English or the Americans, are approaching. But simply we don't know who is it and what's going on, but we heard that they are approaching. It was May the 4th at night, and I couldn't move, absolutely couldn't do anything anymore. So my colleague said, please go find me something to eat. So what could he find? You know, he went out and started to scrape with his fingers the earth, maybe a worm. Luckily, sometimes he found a little frog. So I told him, please find me something, because I just seem like I can't take it anymore. And just laying on a pile of dead, the height, And I said, at this lectern, he comes back within an hour without finding anything. He says to me, listen, what we saw, what did I see? The SS are running and throwing away their rifles. So this means they're escaping because one of the allies, whoever it was, it happened to be the Americans, are approaching. So they are just escaping for their life, to escape. So it's come, let's go. So I can't go. I just don't have any strength. And he was such a kind, such a fine, extraordinary person. He says, I cannot go. He says, what? So you stay here? He says, please find me something to eat. So he went out again. When he saw the SS, not only threw away their rifles, they threw off also their uniforms. And many took the jackets of the prisoners. So then he broke in. There was a kitchen, but his kitchen was only for the SS. For us, they didn't give anything to eat. So he brought me, he broke in, and once he did, many others also, and they plundered the whole kitchen. And what could he bring? You know, from what, the sugar cane, you know, you make it from such a, you know, the sugar cane, but you make the sugar from such a plant, yes? So he brought me such a big, this plant, but it's a sugar cane, and that's what I ate, and his mamish gave me a little strength, and then I with him went out. And by the time we marched out, it was middle of the night, so the whole lager was in a forest. So as it became dawn, became a little bit lighter, she saw that thousands upon thousands of people also realized that the SS are running, escaping, so they also left the inscription. And then we came from this lager, came on the road to the city of Ginskirchen, a big highway. And thousands upon thousands of Yidelach marched. And it happened at the way, because we didn't know where to go. So we just made a slanty path. And my friend and I were almost at the beginning, the head of this big line of all the prisoners who walked out from the lager. Marching for a few hours, and we see the first one. This is the first tank coming. So we were not sure what kind of tank. Is it an American tank or is it a German tank? So again, can you imagine the fear, the fright, the panic which overtook us? But Ebrera, what can we do? There's no, we can't run back into the lager. So we're marching ahead. Then we see it's an American tank. Can you imagine when the American, we approach the American tank, surrounding the tank and try to jump up. I couldn't jump up, but this other one jumped up. So the soldiers said, just stay down, we'll come down. They came down and says, give us food. So you know that the uniform, seat pockets, all over pockets. What they take out? Chewing gums. that's the only thing which they had. And chewing gums. Now what kind of energy can you have from chewing gums? Basically, I can tell you stories what happened afterwards. On the way, we came, as I said, I remember, it's the picture is before my eyes right now. As I've seen it, if the whole thing, the whole event would take place this second. A couple of people, as we marched into the city, we marched through a little village, and there were gardens and fields, and of course chickens were running just in the fields. Couple of guys start to run after the chicken to catch them. Most of us didn't have koyach to run. A few still had koyach to run, had the strength to run. But until to catch this chicken took them an hour, running. With all the running, the chickens ran faster. Eventually, they caught a chicken, what you think, just tore off the head and ate it with the feathers, everything alive. I also promised I'll give you tonight more time to question, so let me just finish off this miser. So he became into the city of Ginskirchen. As soon as these thousands upon thousands of these Jewish prisoners arrived in the city, the Americans were afraid. What will we? We can pillage, we can plunder, I mean, what can we do in the city? So hurriedly, they established as places for us to stay, and they went on the street with the trucks, run at all the prisoners, put them into these temporary places. So we thought, we just came out from a camp. Look, we are going down from a German camp to American camp, and we are running, escaping, my friend and I, and under no circumstances we didn't want to go. Eventually, but we were roaming around in the city a whole day, we didn't have where to stay. So when we came to one house, knocked on the door, they saw us, looked out from the door, from the window, didn't want to open up the door. But we were so exhausted, so tired, and so hungry, so we knocked at the window strong. I remember, since I knew how to speak German, so I shouted, "If you don't let us in, I'm going to go to the Americans and say you're an SS." Yes, I threatened them, "You're the SS." And they were frightened. Not now, then it was just immediately after the war. So opened up the door, and they took us in. And they gave us a room, a nice white sheet, nice pillow, nice blanket. Besides, when I laid down, and I got up in the morning, I myself was ashamed for myself. You could not see anymore the white sheet on which you were sleeping. Millions and millions of lice. You just can, and this is, you know, the lice can kill a person. But after this child, and I spoke with them German, and I spoke with them about everything what I went through, so I had a little compassion, and they treated us. And we ate, and you know, after the war, tens of thousands of Yidden died from overeating. Now, overeating doesn't mean that you ate a lot. Since our intestines, our stomach, so shrank that simply the stomach couldn't take it. So many people got diarrhea, but you know, it's dangerous.